from the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield. This is Inside Eagle Nation, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.
Strike three called. It is well with my soul at J.I. Clement Stadium.
Your all-access look into Eagle athletics is Inside Eagle Nation.
Toogie with one, a three, and a win it! Got it! Game over!
Let's go to the Learfield studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, and I think we say this every week, but this week we really mean it. It's a packed edition of Inside Eagle Nation this week, as a lot going on around campus. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed.
Yeah, this is the fast break edition of Inside Eagle Nation.
It's one of those lightning rounds.
Pretty much.
You get that. Can't remember what show it is on ESPN, but you get like a certain amount of time where you have to hit each topic in 15 seconds, and you've got a countdown clock going on.
Oh, horn sounds. Pardon the interruption.
Yeah, there you go. Good night, Canada. There you go. As always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. Where you want to start, bud?
I feel like I'm wasting a lot of time here.
We have precious time trying to fit all this in under an hour.
We may as well just go men's golf.
All right.
They're extremely consistent. So why not just put Carter Collins' group at the top and get that out of the way?
They were at the Gator Invitational down in Gainesville at the Mark Bostic Golf Course. They finished 7th out of 15 this past weekend on Saturday and Sunday down in Gainesville. They will move on March 2nd and March 3rd, a Monday and Tuesday, in a couple of weeks in Buford, South Carolina, in the Colleton River Collegiate. Again, that starts at 8 a.m. on Monday, March the 2nd. Georgia Southern Women's Golf is actually in action right now if you're listening to this on time. On Tuesday, yesterday, and today, over at the Amelia Island Golf Club, taking on a whole flurry of teams. And you get a lot of different teams and a lot of kind of random teams around this part of the golf schedule. You get deeper into Sunbelt play, you may get into more and more Sunbelt schools, but now you're playing anybody from Washington to Maine.
I know it's hosted by Jacksonville University, but I honestly have never been to Amelia Island.
You've never been to Amelia Island? We'll have to go.
I've heard about it.
Well, I'd hope so. You just did.
Yeah. Quick, short-term memory.
That's there it is. There. But again, women's golf will finish that up today if you're listening to this on time. Men's tennis had a pretty good weekend this past week as it started on Wednesday at the Wallace Tennis Center. They got the victory over Mercer 5-2. They moved down to Bethune-Cookman. And this is something we talked about last week, but it didn't really hit me until going back and reading the recap. But on Saturday, they had two matches, one against Bethune-Cookman, one against Stetson.
Okay.
That's not odd to play two different teams in one day.
Yeah.
But they played two different teams in two different cities in one day. They were at Bethune-Cookman at 9 a.m. on Saturday, got the win 4-1, then had to hop in the van, drive to DeLand, and granted, it's not all that far, but from Daytona Beach to DeLand to start a 2:30 match against Stetson at Stetson. Men's tennis would fall on that one 5-2. But I don't know that I've ever heard of playing two different teams in two different cities on the same day.
We're only 25 miles apart.
Well, excuse me, but
It's Central Florida, kind of towards the eastern part. We've been down to Stetson before for Georgia Southern men's basketball, and we played Bethune-Cookman in a lot of the Olympic sports. We're supposed to play Bethune-Cookman in baseball last year. That got rained out. We're going to go to Jackie Robinson Ballpark and had all kinds of neat stories we're going to be able to tell that night, but ended up getting washed out, I think.
Like, I know it's not all that far. That just seems odd to me. I don't know why. That it matters.
There was a situation in early 2015 where the University of Virginia baseball team came to Charleston, and they played four games in four sites in 4 days.
No, thank you.
And they won them all. They played at Riley Park, Charleston Southern, the College of Charleston, and Bishop England High School.
That's just a tour of Charleston, isn't it?
And every game was on the radio.
Out of way.
I don't know how they pulled it off at Bishop England High School, but four games, four sites, 4 days. They had some, I can't remember exactly what the weather issue was, but they ended up coming to Charleston to get into a showcase. They created this showcase against Charleston Southern. St. John's was down there. LaSalle was down there. And they just all kind of rotated amongst the sites because there was a northern weather situation or northern tournament that got bagged because of really bad weather. So they just put this all together at the last minute and got down to Charleston. And it was one of the more unique things I've ever heard.
And it was all on the radio.
For Virginia, yeah.
Wow.
And that was coming on the heels of national championships. Well, so there was more of a, where's our Cavaliers at? We got to figure this out. We got to get this on the air, Bob. Let's go.
But men's tennis will be on the road again on Saturday in Greenville, North Carolina. They'll take on Bryant University on Saturday and then East Carolina on Sunday. Georgia Southern women's tennis had two scheduled matches on Sunday. The first one against USC Upstate got the sweep 7-0. The second against the College of Charleston, supposed to be in the afternoon, but that one was postponed, a lot like Georgia Southern baseball because of weather coming through the Statesboro area. They will be at home at the Wallace Tennis Center again Friday against Florida Gulf Coast and Saturday against Presbyterian. Georgia Southern Rifle was off this past week, but will head to Charleston, South Carolina for their NCAA qualifier at the Citadel on Sunday. Starts it off at 8 a.m. Georgia Southern Swimming and Diving off this past week as well. They will be at the CCSA Swimming and Diving Championships up in Knoxville, Tennessee on Wednesday through Saturday. So almost a full week of swimming and diving up in Knoxville. Georgia Southern Track and Field, and you guessed it, we're going to talk about Mirab Nagwandala. She breaks a school record, you guessed it again, held by herself in the 3,000 meter.
I told you, she is going to be the track and field record book.
Yes. She should just get, like, all the records tattooed along her arm. It would take her whole arm, but
you'd have to figure out what size font to use.
Small.
But you can't use what? You can't use 24. You have to use the 8.5.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, that was that one. Oh, 2019. Oh, what a day that was.
Georgia Southern Track and Field will head to the Sunbelt Conference Championships on Monday and Tuesday of next week over in Birmingham. Georgia Southern softball was down at the ESPN Wide World of Sports, not called the Disney Wide World of Sports anymore. Got corrected on that one earlier this week.
Oh, but, yeah?
Yeah, that was fun. But down at the Citrus Classic down in Orlando, started it off right on Friday, got the victory over St. Joseph's 5-1, fell against Lehigh 1-0 on Friday as well, and then the rest of the way, Georgia Southern would cruise as Bethune-Cookman on Saturday 5-1 the victory for Georgia Southern softball, 4-0 the victory against Charleston Southern on Saturday evening, and then on Sunday would cap it off with a 9-4 victory over Charleston Southern. So Georgia Southern softball, after the walk-off victory against Mercer,
awesome,
on Wednesday, 5-3.
Mekhi Freeman, big fly.
That was
big
a
time.
Bomb, yeah. Too. Got to tell this one, and Chad Jackson's going to hate me for it. But on Wednesday, Georgia Southern women's basketball had gotten down to Monroe. We were practicing in the Fant-Ewan Coliseum.
Of course.
While Chad is sitting over there watching the softball game, because he's the contact for sports information. We had talked about it all day, how they were down 1-0, they were down 3-0. And all of a sudden, I was over setting up our equipment across the way. He was sitting on the scores table side, sure. Just watching and tweeting out. And all of a sudden, I see him jump up, and he starts sprinting around to my side. And he's pumping his fist. I'm like, what is going on? what is happening that Chad Jackson is running to me?
He won his bid on eBay.
Right. Like, I'm thinking, there's a million things going through my mind. And he's like, Mekhi Freeman, walk-off bomb. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. They got the victory 5-3 over Mercer. But Georgia's on the softball now, 8-2 to start off the season, falling only to Army on Sunday in the Bash in the Borough tournament, and then against Lehigh down in Orlando. It's a heck of a start for Kim Dean and company.
Well, according to the record book, that 8-2 start through 10 games is the best in program history.
There it is.
And for a team that's as young as they are and coming into the season maybe had some things to figure out, that's a start that's, oh.
they figured it out.
They can do it a little bit, huh? But to go 4-1 that week while doing it in such a great place to go makes it even more fun.
They will host the Eagle Round Robin, the second tournament hosted in Statesboro, as a couple of big names in this tournament. You've got Evansville and Monmouth on Friday for Georgia Southern softball. Monmouth and Maryland up in your neck of the woods.
Ah, the Turtles coming down.
I'll get you some Terps.
They just played CFC baseball last weekend.
Well, there it is.
Yeah, how about that?
They have Monmouth and Maryland on Saturday, and then Maryland and Furman on Sunday. 6 games in 3 days. Holy cow.
It is that time of the year.
Sometimes I don't know how softball does it. 6 games in 3 days. My goodness.
I don't know how the grounds crew does it.
You know Ray Malone is going to be over there just dragging every bit of dirt he can. But Georgia Southern women's basketball was on the road this past weekend down to the boot state as started off against the ULM Warhawks, got the victory 72-66 on Thursday. It was a game where Georgia Southern led after one quarter. ULM rallied back in the second quarter, took the lead right before the halftime break, led by one at halftime. And then Georgia Southern got out 22-15 in the third quarter. And then ULM tried to rally back late, but held off by 17 points by Jaden Hamilton. Maya Burns, a heck of a night with 14 points. So two of the three freshmen for Georgia Southern basketball led the way. But a heck of a victory for head coach Anita Howard and company. And it was even more meaningful considering what happened around the Sun Belt Conference that day. You had Texas State knocking off Little Rock.
Right, earlier
which
that day.
Nobody thought was even a sniff of a possibility.
Well, hey, it's nice to see somebody else has a school day game.
Yeah, right.
Because usually that's... that's your cup of tea.
No kidding. We've been everybody's school day the last 3 years. I think we've had one, maybe two. It's been beautiful.
First road win for Anita Howard.
It is.
In conference play.
In conference play. First conference road win for Georgia Southern women's basketball since early January of the previous season. So a heck of a way.
All right. The men get milkshakes after road victories. What do the women get?
A bus trip to Lafayette.
That might be better than a milkshake.
It ended up being. Georgia Southern women's basketball would then head to Lafayette inside the Cajun Dome and fall 72-60 to the Raging Cajuns. Cajuns jumped out early in the ballgame, 27-14 after one quarter, and that was all that Georgia Southern could handle as Louisiana was out there. Point guard Andrea Cornoyer had injured her shoulder earlier on in the week in practice, but you had 5 Raging Cajuns, all 5 starters in double figures, led by Jamira Mathis with 18 points. Georgia Southern had 4 Eagles in double figures, led by Tatum Barber with 15. You had Haley Dice Allen had a heck of a game, 12 points, 4 rebounds. Sarah Moore coming in off the bench, 12 points, 7 rebounds, to tie a career high in scoring for Sarah, but fell 72-60 to the Raging Cajuns. Georgia Southern men's basketball at home inside Hanner Fieldhouse as Coastal Carolina will be the first one calling on Thursday, 79-69, the victory for Georgia Southern men's basketball. Heck of a victory.
Needed it, too. And we had talked the week before about sweeping the Louisiana road trip and how that kept the Eagles in second place. They had defeated Coastal by 3 earlier in the year, but they blew an 18-point lead and had to make some shots and get some stops down the stretch to get that win. This one wasn't as tight, even though Georgia Southern got up 18 again with about 8 left. I think Coastal got it down to 4. But you just never felt like the Chanticleers were going to win the game in the second half. And it was because of Georgia Southern's defense. Coastal didn't make a single 3 in the game. They were 0 out of 14. Said that that was the first time in 11 years that Eagle men's basketball had not given up a 3. They held Devontae Jones to 9 points. He was coming in averaging 16 a game, the best point guard in the Sun Belt. And it was the third straight win that kept them tied for second. And teams at the top keep winning. But what happened on Thursday was Texas State's been boiling hot lately, and we'll get to them in our final segment. They upset Little Rock, and that ended Little Rock's 7-game winning streak. So that, coupled with Georgia State beating App, meant that the Eagles and the Panthers were now 2 games out of first going into Saturday's matchup. Georgia State got the victory over Coastal. Little Rock lost again to Arlington, another team we're going to cover because that's where the Eagles go this week. So the opportunity was there against Appalachian State on Saturday. And first time in 3 years that the Carolina schools had been to Hanter Fieldhouse. And on Saturday, it was the annual blowout. You had Alumni Day, First Responders Day, Greek Day, tons of stuff going on promotionally.
That's a heck of a day.
Yeah, they had to use small type like the tattoo on Marab's arm. I wish it would have gone better. It looked like it was going to. And even though the Eagles didn't play well, they led for more than 35 minutes. But down the stretch, App finished the game, and they won by 5. And it hurt, because Justin Forrest did not play for App, and he's second in the league in scoring. But give them every little bit of credit, because that win took a lot of toughness, and Dustin Kearns in his first year, he's doing a remarkable job with that program. They're going to have their first winning season in nearly a decade.
Fell to Appalachian State 62-57 on Saturday, and it was a game after Georgia Southern women's basketball took on Louisiana. Turned it on the phone, just watching it right there on the bus with Chad Jackson, and that's a very different App team than the App teams that I remember. I mean, we've talked about Coach Fox the last couple of years and now transitioning over to Dustin Kearns, and I hadn't seen Appalachian State play, but that's a very, very different App team.
The way that Jim Fox did it, they were scoring 80 points per game. They had Ronshad Shabazz, who ended up as one of the top players in school history. He was a headache to try to guard, but they never could figure out how to guard other teams. Their defense always let them down. Now they're not scoring a bunch, but they're not giving up anything. I mean, they're still behind Texas State in scoring defense, but they're number 2 in the league. They're giving up about 68 per game. They were down 12, and typically defensive teams have trouble coming back from deficits like that, and I don't like to bring this up, but it's the second time this year that App has rallied from double digits down against Georgia Southern in the second half. So it's just this hex that some teams have on other teams. Now Georgia Southern has been swept by South Alabama and App State. They've swept Troy. They've swept Louisiana. They've swept ULM. But the weekend ended with, as we mentioned, Little Rock losing again. Georgia State won, so Georgia State is alone in second, 1 game out. Georgia Southern and Texas State, ironically, are tied for 3rd, 2 games out. And then right behind that, South Alabama and Appalachian State. 1 game out of the top 4, and as we just mentioned, both of those teams have the tiebreaker. So the Eagles have to finish ahead of really everybody in the top half. Otherwise, they're going to see their seed start to dwindle. But they just swept the road trip in Louisiana, and they're going to have to bring it big time against Texas State and UTA this weekend.
They will head out to the Lone Star State Thursday against Texas State, UTA on Saturday for Georgia Southern men's basketball. But Georgia Southern baseball, well, they did a thing this weekend.
Well, yeah, they did.
Got 3 victories over the Ball State Cardinals. But before we dive into Georgia Southern baseball, want to bring up something. We've talked about it the last couple of weeks, how the fact that Georgia Southern women's basketball was in Louisiana, was going to be at Lafayette on Saturday, meant that I was going to be in Lafayette for opening day of Louisiana baseball.
Right.
Which is great. I mean, great atmosphere. Got to hear center field. It was awesome because they tried to start the inning, They kept singing. It was beautiful. I sent you the video.
Look, for anybody that knows, we talked about this before, they sing that second verse at T-Mobile Field, and they are not stopping until they finish that second verse. It doesn't matter what's going on the field, but the reason why this was so special and the reason why we're talking about it, it's because it was the start of the Matt Deggs era and the official moving on after Tony Robichaux passed away last summer.
Before we dive into the Coach Robichaux ceremony and all the great things that they did this past weekend, I'm not sure if Jay Walker stole a line from you or you've been stealing a line from Jay Walker. But,
oh, no.
No, it's okay.
I'm not exactly sure what you're going to say.
He said it on air. It's okay. But so as the inning begins, Jay Walker, they have the music cut down. Inning's about to start. Jay Walker says, oh, they're going to get that second verse in. And I've heard you say that time and time again. And I just started laughing, and he looked back at me and winked.
I stole that from him.
I figured you did.
Because I can't tell you probably how many times he has said that hearing it since the mid-1980s, whenever the tradition began. Yeah, I think I took that from him. Oh, they're going to get that second verse in. They're going to spend that time in the Mudville night. They're going to get that verse.
And then they're going to scream center field at the top of their lungs. But a great ceremony that they had to honor Coach Robichaux, again, passing away just after the season this past year. But it started out with over 100 former players that had played for Coach Robe started filing in from the third base dugout. They were initially going to just line up behind home plate. But then, oops, there's a lot of them, and there's not enough room behind home plate. So they just all kind of piled around the plate. And as every single one of them came in, of course, Anthony Babineaux has been there for over 20 years. He was the right-hand man for Coach Robichaux for pretty much his entire tenure at Louisiana. But everybody was coming in, shaking Babineaux's hand, giving him a hug, and I don't know that this was orchestrated to go this way, but it turned out to be a pretty cool thing that right behind Babs was Matt Deggs. And I don't know that anybody knew that Matt Deggs was going to be right there. And he took time shaking everybody's hand, giving everybody a hug as they got onto the field. So you've got over 100 former players filing in from the third base dugout, coming out to home plate. Right before they started the ceremony, they led Miss Colleen, Tony Robichaux's wife, onto the field, out in front of all the players. She stood about halfway between home plate and the mound, had one of Coach Robichaux's old jerseys on. But they led Miss Colleen out to the middle part of the infield, and then they played a video, and it hit a lot of people pretty hard because it started out with a couple of pictures of Coach Robichaux, and then the entire video was quotes from Coach Robichaux. He had his voice on the video, and the first one was one that I always loved that he used to say, that his job was teaching people to live right side up in an upside down world. Makes a lot of sense when you really start to think about it.
I hadn't heard that one yet.
But, and it always talks about a lot of people sit down when it's time to stand up, and so their hashtag this year is hashtag stand up. Okay. And so with 25 years under Coach Robichaux at Louisiana, that program, we've talked about it, it was molded around Coach Robichaux's principles, his morals, not necessarily on the field. I mean, it was a Coach Robichaux team on the field, there's no doubt about it, and they're a lot different this year, but the principles is what he really based that off of. And they were playing Southeastern Louisiana to open up the season. And it was cool. You had Southeastern Louisiana. During a lot of ceremonies, you have the team just kind of on the rail in the dugout. Their staff had everybody lining up, straight line, at attention, right on where the green turf becomes brown turf of the warning track. They had the number 36 retired out in center field. You've got ML Tigmore Field and dead center on the newly installed wall. Right. And then to the left of ML Tigmore Field, you've got number 3 for Ron Guidry. On the right side, they unveiled it, the 36 for Coach Robichaux. They're going to have a 36 flag flying in center field just under the American flag for every game. And one of the cool things that they did behind home plate, there's about three sections that, and the place was packed, as you can imagine. Yeah, I mean, weird.
Yeah.
So about three sections right behind home plate, they had put a piece of cardboard paper on the back of each seat, some red, some white. And I was like, I wonder what that is. Well, come to find out, after the video, after they unveiled the 36 on the outfield wall, they said, everybody grab your piece of paper on the back of your seat and hold it up. And even from the press box, you could see it perfectly, that it was a white square with a red 36 in the middle.
Oh, wow.
And that takes a lot to orchestrate.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be the one doing it. But you had,
that's really neat.
You had a moment of silence. You had the national anthem. You had Anthony Babineau out with the entire Robichaux family out in the middle of the diamond. And I never knew this. So every time that Coach Robichaux went to the mound or was on the field, they played the song Green Onions.
Yes.
I never knew that that was essentially his walkout song.
Jay actually told me the story about this the week before while we were down there for basketball.
So all the videos and the entire time they were playing Green Onions. And now they have made it a point. They will not play it anymore unless you're talking about Coach Robichaux.
Yeah.
Which I never knew the name of the song to start with. I just knew the song from the Sandlot.
Jay would ask Coach every year, do you think they're still going to play Green Onions? He said, yeah, I still don't know what that song is. He said he asked him before every season about that.
But after Green Onions played, you had Austin Robichaux and Justin Robichaux, Coach Robichaux's sons, who actually played for him, throw out first pitches. And then it was cool. At the plate meeting, you had the four umpires, Coach Matt Deggs, Coach Matt Reiser, who knew Coach Robichaux really well from southeastern Louisiana. Right. They were at the plate meeting, and then Coach Deggs says, hang on, turns around, and kind of waves his hand for somebody to come out. They brought Miss Colleen, Coach Robichaux's wife, along with Ashley, his daughter, out to join Coach Deggs for the plate meeting. Matt Reiser, and I don't know that anybody knew that he was going to do this. I think he just kind of took it upon himself, brought out two roses, one for Miss Colleen, one for Ashley, presented them at the home plate meeting, and then one of the, and somebody had to have a picture, and this is going to be one of the more iconic pictures for Louisiana baseball. You had Matt Deggs, who he's talked about ever since he was even in contention for the job at Louisiana, that Coach Robichaux, he has said, pretty much saved his life and his career, his life, everything. Coach Deggs turns to go back to the dugout after the plate meeting. On his right arm, he had Miss Colleen. On his left arm, he had Ashley, just escorting them from the plate back to the dugout. It was one of the more iconic things. And even not being a part of the Louisiana baseball culture, you get choked up about something like that.
In the last few minutes, we haven't talked about Eagle Athletics, but this is a story and this is a program that you need to know about because we see them so much. They're in our league, and Coach Robichaux's passing affected more than just the people in southwestern Louisiana. It affected us. I mean, we met the guy once, but he has an impact just because of the principles that he lived by and the standard that he held himself, his team, and his family to. So it hits you. It hits everybody in a different way, and I can't imagine what that was like for our buddies down there to have to go through that and officially say, okay, we need to play baseball again. I mean, they've had fall ball. I think they had a fall series against Mississippi State, but this was the, all right, we've really got to do this now. We've really got to move forward. And I know they didn't have a very good weekend on the field. I mean, it's going to get better. Matt Deggs is going to build a successful program. He was part of it when they were the number one team in the country in 2014. But these are things, as Eagle fans, that we need to be aware of. It's just something that you need to understand, that how important he was to them, and in another way, how important he was to giving Sunbelt baseball the profile that it now maintains. And I don't even mean to tie this in, but over the weekend, we had heard word the last few weeks about Coastal Carolina head coach Gary Gilmore going through some health issues. They had found a mass on his liver, and they weren't sure about what it was, so they needed to run more tests. He reveals last weekend during their opening series that he has liver cancer. So he's going to take a leave of absence. He's going to get that taken care of. And you just sincerely hope that they can get it taken care of and he can get back to doing what he loves to do. Kevin Schnall, his longtime assistant, is going to take over as the interim. You can't help but tie them together, but at the same time, those are two coaching titans that have experienced Omaha, Coach Gilmore winning a national championship in 2016. But it puts everything else in perspective, the way that they used baseball to make an impact, but the way that they built men was even more important.
And we've talked about it before. I think we talked about it just after his passing of Coach Robichaud, that he was one of the most influential people of the series of Easter weekend getting moved from Thursday to Saturday.
Oh, without a doubt.
Instead of playing on Sunday. He felt it was vital that you don't play on Easter Sunday. And just being able to have an impact like that, not just in the state of Louisiana, not just in the Raging Cajun family and the Louisiana baseball culture, but really the whole baseball world. After his passing, you saw everybody from coaches on the East Coast, on the West Coast, everybody in between was affected by Coach Robichaud in some way, shape, or form.
It's tough to garner that much universal respect. But I don't know if you will run into anybody that has a bad thing to say about Tony Robichaud.
No.
And the monument that they unveiled on Saturday morning before they played Louisiana Tech, we get a chance to go down there in May. We're going to spend some time down there.
Yeah. So they then played the intro video, and then, again, it was a lot of the history of Louisiana baseball. And got to experience all of the pregame festivities up in the radio booth with our buddies Jay Walker and Brad Topham. But being able to see the way that they were affected was one of the coolest things. And Jay was telling me when I saw him earlier on in the day that he almost didn't make it to first pitch because he met with Coach Babineau earlier on in the day, and Babs is like, you probably need to see the intro video right before first pitch. And the reason was, somehow, some way, they had dug up Jay's call of the game that sent them to the College World Series. Jay said, to this day, I have no idea where they got that call. I haven't heard that call in probably 5-6 years. And somehow, they found it, put it in the intro video, and it's something special.
I'm guessing there were some onions being cut.
Oh, yeah.
There's no shame in that.
No, not any way, shape, or form. But that was a lot of... It was a thing that... One of the coolest things that I've experienced. And just to be there, to be a part of it with our buddies, Jay Walker, Brad Topham, up in the radio booth, it's something I'll never forget.
We had some business to take care of in Statesboro, which we'll talk about here next, but if there is any other place that I could have been from a baseball standpoint last weekend, it would have been at Teague Moore Field. I'm happy I was there the week before to at least, as part of the schedule, but at least get to see Jay, and he gave me the rundown about how things were expected to take place, and I mean, he didn't even know how he was going to feel that day and leading up, but you were there for it. And I can only imagine. I mean, Jay's an institution down there.
Yeah.
And Brad's been doing color with him for the last few years. And that is a group of people. That is a fan base that wears the heart on the sleeve. And we speak very passionately about Eagle Nation. The podcast is Inside Eagle Nation for a reason. And how we feel about what we feel. They do it too. And you hate to see them hurt right now, but somehow, in the end, they're going to be able to move forward, and they're going to be able to write an uplifting chapter, is the way I'll put it.
A lot like Louisiana talks about Coach Robichaud and now Coach Matt Deggs of how they were an instrumental part of the program, it's a lot of the same way that Eagle Nation feels about head coach Rodney Hinnon.
Yes.
I mean, he's a guy that builds this program off of principles, off of morals. There's not going to be a whole lot of people that you're going to find that has something bad to say about Coach Hinnon. Just does everything off the field right, plays the game of baseball the right way. You're not going to see a whole lot of bat flips and stand there watching home runs and all of that nonsense. And if it does happen, I guarantee you the first person that they're going to have to see when they get into the dugout is Coach Hinnon.
Because he does things the right way.
Yeah.
And when people hear Georgia Southern baseball, they know what they're going to get because of what Rodney Hennon has done here since 2000.
Started his 21st season at the helm here in Statesboro this weekend against the Ball State Cardinals.
Yeah, I asked him about it. He said, well, I guess they haven't gotten rid of me yet. Typically, he wouldn't say anything else. It was perfect.
Give the shrug of the shoulders, palms in the sky.
I'm still here. Just keep winning, I guess.
Started on Friday, a 6-0 victory against Ball State. And good old magic number 6 from assistant coach Alan Beck. He gets a 6.
That's the number.
But a heck of a start by Jordan Jackson. We've talked about him the last couple of weeks, the transfer in from Spartanburg Methodist. You were telling me after the game that he was pretty phenomenal. 5 innings of work, a shutout baseball, 9 strikeouts over 77 pitches.
A joy to watch. He didn't waste any movement. He threw, get the ball back, through. Get the ball back, through. Get the ball back, through. There's something special about every opening night. Whether you win or lose, you remember opening night. Jordan Jackson will never forget opening night 2020 for what he did against a pretty good Ball State team. He did give up a triple with one out in the second inning. Worked around it. No runs, of course, because it ended up being a shutout. I like him a lot. First time getting to see him in a live game scenario. I mentioned that I'd seen him pitch in the fall a couple of times. 6'6", looking downhill at you. And it seemed like every move he made, you had to watch. It was just one of those where if he was moving, it was for a purpose. There wasn't any wasted motion. And when he pitched with that purpose. And when he would walk off the mound, I think he gave that fist pump after he got through 5 and he got the 9th strike. I was like, okay, I get a little bit excited now. I'm probably done. 80-85 was probably going to be my limit. Not terribly emotional, but who knows what was going on in his gut while he was trying to work his way through that lineup. Didn't get a whole lot of support. Got a 2-out run on a wild pitch in the 4th inning. Mitchell Golden scored from 3rd. And then in the 8th inning, things opened up a little bit. Bases got loaded. Jason Swan came up, and we know how good he has been in his career with the bags full. Drove it to straightaway center field. Aaron Simpson was playing in. He almost hit a grand slam. Hit off the bottom of the wall. Everybody scored. And then 2 batters later, the freshman that we have seen so much of, talked so much of, Jarrett Brown from Savannah Christian. It was his only hit all weekend. But it was a towering 2-run home run that stayed fair down the left field line. And just like Jordan Jackson will never forget opening night, Jarrett Brown will never forget that opening night.
As a freshman starting in your first collegiate game, opening night with a bomb, yeah.
That's all right.
I'd be pretty good with it.
That is just all right.
You had Tyler Owens, Jacob Parker, and Jay Thompson finishing out the final 4 innings on just one hit. Tyler Owens knocked the lights out at J.I. Clements Stadium as the power went.
That's how good that changeup is. It was the top of the 7th inning. It was a 1-2 count to Mac Murphy. He throws a fastball. For the story, it should be a changeup because that's what T.O. is known for.
Right.
But it was a fastball. It was a high fastball. The lights go out. Mid-pitch, Murphy swung at the ball. And apparently they could see it long enough where it was a strike on the field. And then the lights came on after about 30 seconds because the entire place lost power. The studio lost power. I guess it was just a bit of a surge on campus. And by the time the lights came back on, umpires got together. And Craig Muir, who was on the plate that night, just turned and looked at Murphy. He's kind of, sorry, man. I don't know. The lights went out, but you swung at the ball. If the lights had gone out before the pitch, they probably would have just done it over. But because it happened in the middle of the pitch and Murphy had already kind of started his swing, they had to call him out. And then the next inning, something is stuck in the netting behind home plate. This is top 8.
I've heard bits and pieces of
okay.
This. You've got to clear this one
up
for me.
I looked at it. I thought it was a leaf. Because it kind of had those spires sticking out, and it wasn't really going anywhere. It wasn't that windy. It was very chilly for opening night. And then everybody starts pointing at it. I'm like, what is everybody pointing at? And Darylyn Roberts, of course, was sitting below and telling me that it was actually a bird. It was her birthday weekend, so she was down. She got a chance to see a couple things, had a nice celebration for her. Happy birthday, sweetie. The bird wasn't moving, so that's why I thought it was a leaf. But then you saw the wings kind of flap and jiggle a little bit. And yeah, I'm doing it in studio. You can't see it, but Colin's laughing because I'm trying to show what it was like. And then
this thing needs to be Facebook Live.
It was with 2 outs, and he kind of just got his little claw or his beak off the net and flew away back behind the plate. And if you go back and listen to the air check, it was one of the loudest cheers all night. It was almost as loud as when Jerry Brown hit the home run. The bird had gotten away, and then he just started to fly off. Very next pitch, it was a line drive that Brown caught at third at the end of the inning. Baseball just gives you stories like that. The lights going out mid-pitch, then the next inning the bird getting stuck. We still talk about stuff that happened 4 and 5 years ago because it doesn't happen anywhere else but baseball. I mean, the sprinklers have gone on at weird times. We've had an 11-minute rain delay before.
Yeah, we did.
Against Little Rock in 2017, we had an 11-minute rain delay. I've never heard of an 11-minute rain delay. By the time they were trying to get the tarp on the field, it stopped raining.
Yeah.
And then the Eagles beat Little Rock that day. But only baseball can give you stories like that. And it was the start of a sweep because they play the doubleheader Saturday. And that was fun, too. I didn't get a chance to see it. Big Frank did a great job on GSEagles.com, rallying for a 7-4 victory in Game 1 on Saturday, getting 6 runs to help come back from 4-0 down. Blake Evans had a big 2-run single. And then in the second game, they did a thing, and they pretty much did it all in the first inning, scoring 15 times. Second most runs in an inning in program history, most since that 16-run inning against NJIT back in 07. Ended up with a 16-0 win. 3-0 start, 2 shutouts, and Georgia Tech's here tonight.
We got back from the Cajun Dome in Lafayette, back to the hotel, and after getting back, it was time for dinner, and so I checked the stat broadcast on...
I'm glad to see it hadn't broken.
I checked the stat broadcast for to see what the score was. It was 4-0. I was like, okay, good start. I go through the line, I start eating, and whenever we get done, Chad Jackson asked me, hey, what's the score for baseball? I was like, well, it's 4-0 before, let me check. I opened it up. It was 15-0 still in the first inning. I was like, huh? You send 20 guys to the plate.
I've never heard of that before, a 20-batter inning.
No, I haven't either.
Not for a team that I've covered, at least.
I've never seen it. Going back and putting it in my scorebook, I was like, wait, I need 3 columns for the first inning? Excuse me? But 15 runs in the first inning. You had everybody reach their first time through. A single, walk, single, walk. Everybody reaches their first time through.
That's a true rally, though. You think about making impact plays in baseball, and so many people want to associate that big extra base hit or that memorable home run. But true rallies are where you get singled to death and you can't get people out. But there were 9 guys that reached before there was even an out recorded. That doesn't happen very often.
No. That was something special for Georgia Southern baseball. And this team has a little bit of something that they have the potential to be something pretty special this year for baseball.
It would have been nice to try to get the 4-game sweep, but the weather on Sunday, you know, it did what it did. But I'll gladly take a 3-0 start going into Georgia Tech, who we're going to see here in a few hours with Tyler Owens getting the baseball against Tech left-hander Luke Bartnicki. They were 2-1 last week in the Atlanta Challenge. But this is one we brought up before. Tech's won the last 10 meetings. Not that Georgia Southern hasn't had success against Tech before, but Tech has lately. They've won every meeting since 2014. Remember the 2016 game the Eagles had with 2 outs in the 9th, only to see it go an extra 7 innings at J.I. Clement Stadium. That was my first Georgia Southern-Georgia Tech game. But 10 straight losses, you would feel like it's going to end eventually. Maybe it is going to be tonight, considering how well T.O. threw on Friday in relief. And Tech just got blown out by St. John's 12-1 on Sunday up at Russ Chandler Stadium. They're very young. They do have 2 really good guys back at the top of their order in Luke Waddell and Michael Goldberg. Goldberg was second in the ACC in hitting last year, 355. Bartnicki didn't throw at all last weekend, so he is as fresh as could be. But he's part of a team that has 17 freshmen. And for Danny Hall, you think about all of those great teams being veteran teams. but they lost a bunch off that squad last year that won 43 games and won the ACC Coastal. I think that ultimately they are going to be fine, but even he in multiple interviews has admitted, yeah, we're not really clicking on offense yet. We really don't know what we have, but when it does, I still think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with in the ACC, but maybe this is early enough where Georgia Southern could end that losing streak against them.
Next four games for Georgia Southern baseball are against teams that are nationally ranked. Georgia Tech comes in number 19 in the country. East Carolina this weekend, where Georgia Southern will head to Greenville, ranked number 21 in the country. Mike Grace will have the call for you on that one up in Greenville.
That's a big series. Yeah. East Carolina went to a super last year before falling to Louisville. They've got one of the best two-way players in the country in Alec Burleson. He's a power hitter. He's starting on the mound this year. And the good thing about that East Carolina is going to return that series to J.I. Clement Stadium in 2021. So if they're still top 25 by then, that's extremely valuable to be able to host a team like that. Typically, it's been with Georgia showing improvement the last few years. They were down for a three-game series, and we knew that was going to be packed. But with the success that Billy Godwin has had in Greenville, if they continue that, that's a big one, but next year could be even bigger.
Georgia Tech coming into town tonight, if you're listening to this on time on Tuesday. 6 o'clock, the first pitch from J.I. Clements. As in our final segment of this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, we will dive into men's and women's basketball in the coming week for both of those squads. Again, because of issues with Facebook the last couple of days, as the updates happening to Facebook not allowing for videos to be posted. So we will continue with the True Blue Eagle of the Week next week because of issues with Facebook that they're having over the last couple of days.
Come on, Zuckerberg.
We've heard Twitter going down, but I've never heard of Facebook.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, it's a thing. Anyway, women's basketball will be at home this week against Coastal Carolina and Appalachian State. Thursday, the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers will head to Statesboro. 6:30, the tip-off inside Hanner Fieldhouse.
You got some revenge on your mind, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a Coastal Carolina victory, 66-59, up in the HTC Center a couple of weeks ago. This is a Coastal Carolina team. They are flat rolling in Sunbelt Conference play. 21-3 overall, 11-2 in the conference. They just knocked off the Trojans of Troy. Listen to this final score. 124-103. I don't know when the last time that a Sunbelt Conference women's basketball team scored 103 points and lost.
Scott Van Pelt talked about that on the midnight edition of SportsCenter as the one big thing, I believe. I saw DJ Williams had 51 points.
51 points.
Oh.
Only the third women's basketball player ever to have 50-plus points.
So I'd watch 32 on Thursday.
Yeah. Georgia Southern got her in foul trouble.
Well, then she had a triple-double on Saturday.
Yeah, then she does a thing.
That's fine.
Georgia Southern got DJ Williams in foul trouble early in the ball game up at the HTC Center. She had to sit, but when she came back at the 8:17 mark, and why I remember it was the 8:17 mark, I don't remember, but whatever.
Because you remember numbers.
Yeah, sure. But when she came back, it was DJ Williams' game, yeah. And she led Coastal Carolina back and got the victory inside the HTC Center. Georgia Southern will have revenge on their mind against Appalachian State on Saturday as well. Fell to the Mountaineers 83-75 up in Boone, North Carolina just a couple of weeks ago. But Georgia Southern with two games this week in Hanner, 6:30 the tip-off on Thursday against the Chanticleers, 2 o'clock the tip-off on Saturday against the Mountaineers. Georgia Southern men's basketball will head down to the Lone Star State, as we mentioned, Texas.
Finally.
State.
Woo!
Yeah, you finally get to see Bill.
That's right.
8 o'clock the tip-off at Texas State on Thursday. 3 o'clock the tip-off at UT Arlington on Saturday. Started off with Texas State, and that was something that we haven't seen a whole lot of the Texas schools. It was December the 19th and December the 21st. That was a day.
That was the start of conference play.
So Georgia Southern defeated Texas State 67-64 in Hanner Fieldhouse. You were here for that one before you headed down to Orlando for the Cure Bowl.
That's right.
You remember Texas State?
Bobcats, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Got down 11-0, 16-1. Nigel Pearson made a big three late, which put Texas State up four. I think there were less than 2 minutes left, but Georgia Southern scored the last 7 points. I think this has happened all over the league this year. Teams have built big leads, other teams have come back. Some teams have had leads midway or 7-8 minutes left in the second half, but it has happened countless times. I know with the Eagles it's happened, it seems more often than not, but they have done it just as much to other teams as other teams have done it to them. It's just one of those crazy years where leads don't seem to be safe regardless of how big they are. And Texas State actually blew an 18-point lead at Appalachian State the weekend before, but they didn't have Nigel Pearson. He had returned to Texas. He was there celebrating the birth of his daughter. And that's only one of two losses that Texas State has had over its last 11 games. They started league play 1-4. They're 9-2 in their last 11. So Georgia Southern needs to get right pretty quickly against a team that they are tied for third in the league with. And then Saturday you head to the Metroplex against a dangerous Arlington team, still one of the teams I do not want to see in the tourney. They were up 11 on Georgia Southern in the second half of that game on the 21st. David Azor had 33 in that game. Brian Morin had a huge first half. I think he had his first Division I dunk, if Josh Sowers told me that correctly. He had a breakaway in the first half. Now, Warren's 5'9", so he's not going to get a whole lot of chances, but he's had the ability, and Sowers told me after the game, yeah, it was the first time he's dunked in a D1 game. Like, oh, okay, we won. Yeah, Georgia Southern came back to win that game by 3. And it's been back and forth. It's been a really back and forth series. It's 6-6 all time. And it would seem that UT Arlington's turn is to win, but Georgia Southern needs both of these games because South Al's got it figured out. App just had the victory down here. They're both a game out. Texas State's hot as everything. And if you want to stay in the top four and only have to worry about one game before you get to New Orleans, they keep getting more important. And the Texas schools are in the middle of long homestands. Texas State's in the middle of a four-gamer. UTA's playing in the middle of a five-game homestand. This late in the year, that is a gift because they have Texas State at the College Park Center to finish it up. So they've got rivalry game next weekend before you get that Tuesday matchup where the regular season ends and everybody plays somebody they haven't seen before. But business has picked up for Eagle men's basketball, and I hope to have a good couple of stories from the trip. Get to see Bill and Brand at San Marcos. Get a chance to – I haven't seen Josh in forever because that Arlington game, I was in Orlando for the Cure Bowl. So he was here. He had the whole press table by himself that day.
I'm pretty excited. Next week when women's basketball goes to Texas – that Friday is when they moved the Texas State UT Arlington men's game.
That's right.
From Saturday to Friday. We'll be in Arlington on Friday night. I might get to go see some Josh Sowers and Bill Colhane.
So the women are in Texas next week?
Yes.
Crazy schedule.
Yes. I don't get it. But I don't have to.
That's fine.
Georgia Southern starting a three-game road stretch. Just four games left in the regular season for Georgia Southern men's basketball, and then it's trying to decide where you're going, who you're going with, to where.
And not knowing who, what, where, when, why is a little bit concerning with the overlap season, but we'll get it soon enough. We'll get her taken care of. We know that the Eagles are probably going to have to play at least one game before New Orleans if they're going to get there, with only four teams making it to New Orleans in the tournament format this year. But we'll just have to wait and see. These are big ones. And then after the Texas road trip the next Friday, Eagles have to go to Atlanta to play the Panthers, where they haven't won since 92. So the next couple weeks are daunting. But if they can find themselves, they should be right back in the thick of it. I will say that a 1 or 2 seed, while still possible, seems to be very difficult. They need to concern themselves with just playing well and not worried about where they are in the standings.
Women's basketball at home, 6:30 the tip-off on Thursday against Coastal, 2 o'clock against App State. Men's basketball on the road to Texas State on Thursday, 8 o'clock the tip-off from San Marcos, 3 o'clock the tip-off against the UT Arlington Mavericks on Saturday.
Fast break is over. Good job.
Ready break. Until later on tonight, when we've got Georgia Southern baseball against the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, ranked number 19 in the country, coming down to Statesboro for the first of two meetings this year. But until tonight, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.